Perfect. Now I have your number. Thanks.
Hey, I'm Robbie Kramer. You're listening to the Leverage Podcast, where we discuss using your social skills to hack dating, travel, finding your dream job, and becoming a complete man.
Hey guys, I'm back with a gentleman and amazing coach that I was had a lucky enough chance to be featured on one of his shows. He's got a great following on Instagram and a really influential coach on motivation. Just a really cool guy in general. His name is Will Moore. Will, welcome to the show, man.
Thank you, buddy, for that warm intro. Appreciate it. Glad to be here, Robbie.
You've interviewed so many people from a wide range of different topics. Motivation is obviously, I think, your bread and butter. And so I'd love to kind of get your take on that in a bit. I'm sure you've learned so much just kind of being in, you know, within this industry and having a successful podcast and a show. But how'd you get started in this? What's your story?
Yeah, so I had a tough kind of first half of my life. My parents got divorced when I was young, when I was two. And my mom was an alcoholic and she had a temper and verbal and physically abusive temper, which wasn't fun at the time. And I kind of was trying to find my way and I had a hard time. And we moved around a lot as well. And so by the time I was 18, I guess when I got to college, I was like your typical victim, sure that life was out to get me. There was nothing I could do about it. And yada, yada. I just kind of was ready to give up straight up. I was suicidal at that point. And sure. I serendipitously discovered a book that was introduced to me by one of my professors. Thank you. I don't even remember his name at this point. I should, because it was such a life-changing moment. But it was called How to Win Friends and Influence People by Dale Carnegie, which is, a lot of people are familiar with it. It's a classic, self-help book, that one of the first back in the 40s that kind of started the whole like, oh wow, there's a different way to look at the world. So it blew my mind, cause I didn't even know about self-help or any of these things. And I just was like, wow, there's a different way to look at myself, the world. And I just decided right then and there, I was like, I need to change everything. I was like, this is my rock bottom. Let's go. I got nothing to lose. So I just kind of scrapped everything the way I'd been doing things. And I just kind of started using myself as a human science experiment. And I became an insatiable self-help beast. And I just was reading everything I could get my hands on, seminars and audio back then. Back then it was tapes, right? This is way right. Back in the day. I won't age myself to tell you how, but 25 years ago, basically.
Okay. You look young, man.
Well, thanks. So, and I just kind of slowly started rebuilding my life straight up, and it didn't happen overnight. But one step at a time, one day at a time, I started to improve in these different areas of my life that I've kind of been able to go through a lot and step back and sort of say, okay, what did I learn? Who am I? Why did this work? You know, and look at all these notes I took over the years. It's these five core areas, my mindset, my relationships, my career, my finances, my emotional health and giving back, and my physical health. And those are these five main areas we all share. And if you can kind of get those working for instead of against you, using what I call the equation of life, which is your belief system plus your repeated actions plus time equals who you will become, then you're gonna, you know, you're eventually it's gonna pay off. But what people want, we're living in this instant generation, people want it now. It doesn't happen that way. And you gotta slowly start working on things. Just like if you were to eat a donut a day, you wouldn't notice anything for the first couple days or week or even maybe month, but then all of a sudden you start, you know, gaining weight, and then 10 years from now, that donut compounds and, you know, maybe it's an extra 15 to 20 pounds type of thing. So that's the idea. And so it all involves your habits and kind of, that's what it all circles around. Like, what are the habits you've got in each of these core areas? What are the failure habits you have? What are the success habits you want to replace them with? And to me, that's kind of what I built kind of my life around. And then now that I was fortunate enough to exit my business, I had a delivery startup business. It was called Doorstep Delivery. very similar to what people know as Grubhub or Uber Eats, these types of DoorDash type of business. We started way before them. We were fortunate enough to exit in 2019. We sold for a combined $323 million. I didn't get all that, but I did get a good chunk of it. And so I never have to work technically for the rest of my life. And that just kind of put a different perspective on what it is I really want. What do I want to do? And that finance part, I was chasing that for so long. And part of it was like, okay, I'm going to become so filthy, stinking rich that everybody's going to feel terrible that was mean to me. And I'm going to make them all sorry that they were ever, you know, right, that typical victim back in the beginning. Then as I started to evolve, I realized that's ridiculous. But I was kind of already on this like career finance track. And that became a big part of my life. And I don't regret that. But I see now how that's just one part of the equation, right? Your career in finance is 1/5 of the overall of your course, of the overall equation of what happiness is. And that money alone isn't going to make you happy. So it felt great to get that big paycheck, but then it was like, okay, now what? What's next? And so this is what's next.
So that's really fascinating about the exit. Prior to that, were you successful or had you built other businesses or was it kind of like because obviously to have an exit like that, it takes, quite an accomplishment. So was it like a slow buildup to that or were you kind of from like a rags to riches sort of deal?
So I had gotten into real estate heavily. Mm-hmm. I was fortunate enough, like I said, I became this insatiable self-help beast. And I was reading everything I could get my hands on, not only about like how to become happier, but career and finance books like Rich Dad, Poor Dad, Think and Grow Rich, like tons of these types of books that just kind of shifted the way I looked at money, not just myself as well. And career and like how you can use money to work for instead of against you, stuff they don't teach you in schools. So most of the stuff I teach people now, you don't learn in school, which to me is just like, don't get me started. Yeah. Part of my mission in life is to help kind of change that system so that you are learning these basic skills to become a happy, healthy human, as you grow into adulthood. And part of being a success is financial and learning to get your money working for instead of against you. And whether you're sleeping or actually working for it, it should be growing. So I was fortunate enough to read these things on my own early on. And I got into real estate. I bought my first property when I was probably 21 using the techniques that I used in the book. And just ended up renting it out. I lived in it for a couple of years. I had my buddy helping pay my mortgage that was living with me. And then I basically rented it out thinking, let's just see how this goes. And I got way more for it than I thought I would. There was a bidding war because it was near my alma mater, my college, which was Rollins in Winter Park, Florida. And the college students were like, all like, we want to be within a mile of campus with a pool. Is that a pool? And I was like, okay, there's something here. So I just compounded that and I did it 10 more times. And so whether I did doorstep or not, I still had that.
You had the reside,
and that's still, even if I never did doorstep, I would still have a nice healthy retirement. Cause now most of my properties by this point are pretty much paid down.
Yeah.
And actually they're all paid down. Cause when I sold the company, I paid the rest of them down. But like I was saying, the law of compounding, you borrow money, get an interest rate, you've got your mortgage. And if you can get more from your tenant than your mortgage is, then you're positive cash flowing. And it's the best scenario ever. Because not only do you have extra money that you're getting to live off of, but they're paying down your mortgage. You're getting
they're buying the house for you.
They're buying
the house. I actually did the same thing, but I used Airbnb. And instead of buying places, I rented and sublet. This was back in like 2012 before Airbnb was a household name. And me and a buddy had a place in New York City, big place right in Union Square. And we were running poker games there. And we were like, let's put this place on Airbnb and see what we could get for it. We were getting $1,000 a night. And, our rent was around 10K, I think. So usually we do, between 20 to 25 a month. So then we just kind of expanded on that model, got a bunch of places in New York, LA, went down to Miami as well. And, kind of built it up that way. And that's one of the big things I talk about a lot on the show is real estate is such a great way to build wealth because other people are paying for your properties, essentially.
It's so fantastic. Yeah, the Airbnb, I missed that boat. That was kind of after me. Or when I kind of stopped buying properties at that point. I had my 10 properties and I was happy with that. And then I got into my other business ventures. It's a great way.
Yeah, I did. I mean, I read Rich Dad, Poor Dad as well. I think I was 20, but I was like, how am I going to get the money to pay for these, you know, income producing assets? And luckily with Airbnb, it was kind of a hack where you didn't need to get the money,
but yeah, smart.
Yeah. But, you know, it's cool that you were able to do that, you know, by that other model of obviously buying instead of renting and subletting, because that can be nowadays is a little bit tougher. Most landlords are pretty, you know, privy or against Airbnb. But in terms of a lifestyle business, in terms of building your lifestyle, I don't think there's a better investment out there besides, I don't want to say better, but real estate's a great one. Curious what a lot of the guys who are listening are really interested in sort of, you know, how to invest their money, how to build sort of they're all trying to set up a lifestyle. And you got married at a pretty young age, right?
No, I was late in by today's standards. Okay. I met my wife when I was, 35? Yeah, I think 35.
Okay.
And we got married when I was like 37, I think.
Oh, got it. All right. So during that time when you were single before that, sounds like you had, you know, quite a bit of money to play with, had a lot of, you know, options as far as what to do, where to live, who to date. What advice would you give to guys who are maybe in their, you know, early 20s, mid 20s, early 30s, who are single, to set up, you know, a lifestyle to, because obviously you blazed the trail there.
Yeah, I mean, I had a lot of fun. Yeah. I had a lot of fun and I don't regret any of it. And I definitely recommend anybody, you know, everybody's different. So there's not like a universal, like you should wait until this age to get married and you should, but in general, I would say, you know, you just got to go with your gut in terms of like, if you still have that itch of like, there's more to see, there's more to do. Like you may want to think about getting married at, you know, 21, 22. It's just, for guys, in my opinion, most of us don't mature until we're around 30 anyways.
Yeah.
there's always the exceptions to the rule. That's kind of, to me, my uncle years and years ago when I was like 17 years old, I'll never forget. He looks at me and he says, listen to me and listen to me good. He says, you will not get married before the age of 30. Do you understand me? He's like, don't even think about it. Just promise me. And I just remember being like, sure. And then like, as I got older, I remember there was a couple of close calls when I was in my 20s where, you know, you're in love and they want to get married. And then it just didn't play out. And part of me, I always had that in the back of my mind, like maybe I should hold off. Right. And yeah. I'm so glad I listened to him. I'm so glad because I did. I just had a great time. I enjoyed my life and my friends and did my thing and went out and dated and had the full experience. But then at a certain point in everybody's life, you got to say, okay, it's like, if you want kids, if you don't want kids, it's a different story. But if you want a family and if you want kids, which I did, you sort of say, okay, like, what do I need here to make sure, like, when I have kids, like, I'm not going to be constantly stressed out about where my next paycheck's coming from. And I can give, like, I have a solid foundation that I can give my family. Cause I think having kids is stressful to begin with. It's the best thing in the world, but it's also the hardest thing in the world. And so having your ducks in a row and being financially stable, I think is a big part of the equation to make sure that you get through it.
Yeah, for sure. Sounds like, you know, so you waited till you were 37, you said?
Yeah. Yeah.
And then had kids at you had kids at 37?
I was 39 when I had Wyatt. I've got two kids. I've got two boys. I've got Wyatt, who's just about to turn 5. And we have the same birthday month. So I'll be 45 and he'll be 5 in next month. And then I've got a 2-year-old as well. So yeah, I was 39. No, I just turned 40 when I had Wyatt. Just turned 40. Yeah, when I had my first son.
OK. because I'm 38, I'll be 39 in June, and I'm getting the itch. You know, I've had a girlfriend for about 7 months, and I think she's the one. So
nice. You know, I've had she know fun. That?
Yeah, she knows. She's nice. She's a lot younger than me though. So she just turned 22.
Yeah, it's fine. You know, it's age is just a number. My wife's 10 years younger than me. Mm-hmm. And you know, she's more mature than I am. So, you know.
Oh yeah. I'd say she's also more mature than I am, even though she's 17 years younger, but in a lot of ways.
Nice. Yeah. That's
did fun. You have when you're because it can be tough for a lot of guys kind of in their late 20s, early 30s, all my friends started getting married and having kids. And there was a lot of pressure, not pressure directly, but sort of just the pressure from, you know, that's what you're supposed to do. And kind of feeling like, oh, if I don't have kids, when my friends are going to have kids, I might miss the boat on that sort of thing. Did that occur for you as well? Did you feel any of that pressure around that time, or you had friends that weren't?
You know, it's funny. I'm rereading James Clear's Atomic Habits. You read that?
Great book. Amazing. Yeah.
Yeah, it is a great book. And I just read the part where it talks about, you know, you're reducing friction by making things. Is this the one, the chapter of obvious or attractive? And the part about how we tend to do the things that, evolutionarily speaking, from, you know, back in the prehistoric time, like we were safe in numbers. So we do things that the people around us are doing. And those are the habits we tend to develop, good or bad, right? I was fortunate enough where I actually was the norm in Florida. I was living in Orlando, Florida at the time. And most of my guy friends were either my age or a little bit younger. And so like mid-30s, and we were all still pretty much single. Like, yeah. And we all kind of got married right around the same time, like mid to late 30s. Mm-hmm. But it's a great question because I, you know, then you look at a lot of people, like Midwest especially, like a lot of people get married really early, like they're young to mid 20s. And it's kind of like, I definitely see that there's that pressure when everybody else around you is getting married, like, oh, I guess I should too. And that's a real thing for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, you know, you just have to find friends that are more your speed, I guess, which is kind of what I did. I just kind of shifted my my group of friends. And
yeah, right. I mean, yeah. If you're not ready, you're not ready. So don't just conform because you think you should.
Yeah.
Hang out with
people. Did you do much traveling in your 30s?
Or? You know, it is one regret I have. I didn't have the itch to travel at all for some reason. Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. I guess I was growing doorstep delivery, the business I told you about. So that, you know, we grew that from like age 26 to 36. So that was a good chunk of my, you know, I got out of college at what, like 23. So, you know, I kind of needed to be for that 10-year span, needed to be in Orlando. It was hands-on. I mean, running a business, you know, it's like,
yeah,
12 hour days, a lot, 7 days a week. A lot of times, I mean, you know, eat, breathe, sleep it. And, right. You know, traveling just wasn't even on my radar really. And it wasn't until I got married and then it was like, we had kids and it was like, oh, wait, now I want to travel. It's like, oh, wait, now I can't really. So definitely one of those.
Well, it's interesting. I just interviewed a guy and he was on my podcast. I was on his, Scott McKay. If you've ever heard of him, he's done, I think, 60 something countries with two kids. And he's done 100+ countries with him and his wife.
That's so great.
Yeah.
Well, there you go. No excuses, right? Good. Yeah.
But, you know, of course it is, you know, you got kids in school. It's a,
yeah,
they would just do it over the summers.
That's really cool. That's really cool. Yeah. I mean, traveling, my wife she worked for the Chicago public school system. So we do have the summer off, but now it's like, right. I always, you know, I'm always hungry to grow whatever it is that I'm working on. And right now I'm working on this, you know, this career, this, whatever you want to call it, where I'm trying to help people and grow that. And it's like, I'm very obsessive and like, I want it to happen right away. But at the same time, like I said earlier in the podcast, I know that it doesn't happen right away. And it's step by step, day by day.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, we're going to Sedona, my wife and I, just a couple's trip.
Oh, nice.
For a week. And, you know, we do little things like that. But yeah, I would love to do like a real trip. I think the youngest one's a little too young. He's not quite two yet.
Yeah.
Maybe in the next couple of years, we'll start thinking about that. It's a good idea.
I mean, you're right though. It is very tough to grow a business while traveling. There's just you know, too many things you got to look out for. You're changing, you know, unless you're, unless you're kind of, you know, staying somewhere for months at a time. If you're actually traveling,
type of business, like if all you need is like a laptop and you can be anywhere,
right?
That's one thing. But like for me, restaurants, like I had to constantly be checking in and talking to our restaurant owners. And, you know, we had at one point our drivers, we'd have driver meetings. And we had like thousands of drivers at one point, and we had thousands, you know, hundreds of restaurants, close to 1,000. And I mean, it was like, yeah, you can't just take off to Greece for the week when you have that going on, unfortunately.
No way, for sure. When you were, prior to starting that business, were you always entrepreneurial? Did you have any like quote unquote real jobs after college, or did you go straight into?
I got fired from every real job I ever had. I was a terrible, terrible employee. Uh-huh. And at first part of my, I told you that early on when I was a victim, I thought there was something wrong with me. I'm like, why can't I get a normal job like people? And why can't I keep, I had a problem with authority. I was a real wise ass. I didn't like being told what to do. Mm-hmm. Never have. Asked my wife. Still don't. Still don't like to. And yeah, I just sort of decided that I needed to move in a certain direction. And yeah, it was sort of like, okay, I'm going to do it.
Yeah, same exact story. I think it's like the entrepreneurial personality trait. Or personality, there was, I don't know if you've heard before, there's actually an entrepreneurial like personality category. This guy has a whole sort of niche product on that, or he talks about that. And he talks about how entrepreneurs, if they're in the car and they're trying to get somewhere, they have to turn the music down because it's like too noisy in their mind. I don't know. That's one thing that stood out to me. I was like, how the hell does he know?
No, I like the music loud.
Yeah, okay.
I'm allowed. Yeah. My wife always tells me to turn it down. I love to blast the music. My kids love it too. Like I'll blast the music and we'll dance. And she'll be like, turn
it down. No, you meant if you're lost and you're trying to like figure out.
Oh, if you're lost.
Yeah. Like if you're, you know.
Yeah, that's probably true.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Right.
Well, I know a lot, you know, I'm ADD. I know a lot of entrepreneurs I think are, you know, it's like, cause our brains don't necessarily fit into that like 9 to 5 sort of like square box. Right. Totally.
The problem with authority
box or square pegs, we don't fit in. And so it's kind of like, yeah, I was always like, I beat to my own drum. And then once I started to improve my mindset and my confidence and my perception and my attitude on myself, the world around me, and like, kind of, it was like, okay, wait, I'm not so bad. Like I got weaknesses just like everybody else does, but that guy's got them. That guy's got them. That guy's got them. How can I learn to work around my weaknesses, outsource them, right? Figure out how to kind of hack them. How can I focus on the strengths that I do have, which for me is like my creativity. And I do have an insatiable drive. Like when I make my mind up to do something, it's like, I'm all in. And so I decided to use that stuff for instead of against me. An entrepreneurial path was the exact right fit for me. And I did way back when I was a kid, I did always mow the lawns. In the summers, I used to have a couple buddies back when I lived in Bethesda, Maryland. I still remember we would go knock on doors in the summer and we'd mow lawns. We'd knock on doors in the fall and we would rake leaves, and we'd knock on doors in the winter and we would shovel snow. And it was just a good way to pick up extra comic book money. I guess that was kind of entrepreneurial.
Yeah, for sure. So one of the things that can be tough, something I've struggled with a lot is, I don't know if you call it, you know, just you're searching for too much control. Like I always have a trouble outsourcing things I suck at in my business. And I see that happen a lot with guys who are, you know, entrepreneurs. And obviously to grow a business and have an exit, you've got to be, you kind of have to get past that, I feel like. Was that something you ever struggled with, into trying to do everything until, you know, you end up finding someone who can do it better?
Yeah, I mean, definitely. It's human nature to want to, like, especially with your own thing, to want to do everything. Yeah. But at a certain point, it's not scalable.
Right.
You can't scale your business and grow it if you're the only one manning the helm in every single position.
Totally.
So in control, you know, that is, it's hard for me to relinquish control, especially when I'm like, well, I can do it better than them. Why not? Because that's not the best use of my time. Right. So yes, that was definitely a learning curve. And that's something that if you want to be successful, you've got to learn to be able to do. And these days, you know, Fiverr, Upwork, it's, you can run a business remotely, and with, there's so many people to choose from. And, but it's still the same in terms of, I found, because I use Fiverr and Upwork and I hire people for various parts of my business. At the end of the day, though, it's still hard to find good people, just like it always was. And it, I look at that as one of my main jobs, whatever I'm doing at my old business and this business, is that hiring the right people, getting the right people on the bus and getting the wrong people off the bus is like the is at the very top priority list. Because when you have the right people on, and they can just help you tremendously to grow. And if you're synergizing and you guys have the same, they're treating the business like their own versus constantly trying to stay on somebody, constantly, you know, why didn't you do this? You know, like they're not into it. Like there's just no way you're going to be able to grow as a team that way. So I look at that as like part of my job versus a lot of people look at it like, oh God, I just need to hire somebody. Or I just right. need, and it's like, no, you need to get the right person. And if they're not working out, you got to get rid of them immediately. Like, don't let them suck the soul out of you and your business and your energy and your time and waste it.
For sure. So what are your current habits? Let's talk about that real quick. Cause that's, I know, a big part of your, you know, your premise. And also James Clear and Atomic Habits is a book I recommend to everyone. That really helped me get through a difficult period in my life about 3 years ago, where I was just kind of like wrapped up in this world of partying and, you know, going on yachts and doing crazy stuff. And then I realized I'm like, you know, 20 pounds overweight and really poor health and neglecting my business. So on the outside, you know, on Instagram, it looked pretty cool, but I was actually feeling like shit about it. So, and figuring out the right habits and slowly, you know, as you mentioned earlier in the interview, implementing those over time isn't sexy or necessarily fun, but it really pays off down the road.
Right. Right. Absolutely. You know, I've got my 10 habits here that I'm working on. I always have habits that I'm working on. And that's part of the fun is it's like, if you're not working, if you're not growing in an area of your life, like where's the fun in that? It's like, you're not growing, you're dying, right? There's that old saying. To me, that's true. If you're not, if you're stagnant, if you're not moving towards something physically, mentally. So I constantly, you know, I like to play a game and I kind of like, I'm like, all right, how long is it going to take for me to nail this habit? And some habits I've never been able to fully nail, but I've gotten way better at them. Like dwelling is a perfect example. I've got that still on my list here. That's been on my list for years. And for whatever reason, I've gotten way better at it. I used to dwell really badly. Like if something bad would happen, like something like financial, like one of my stocks went down a ton or something bad happened with the business, or I got in a fight with my girlfriend or, you know, whatever. Like I would just really just like go into this dark cave and just be your typical victim. Like I was back in college, and I would let it get to me and just sort of poor me, like what, why does the world have to be like this? Like type of attitude. And it's just like, that's so ridiculous. Cause there's, can't control things in life. They're going to happen. And so I've gotten way, way better at that. But there, I do still catch myself in moments, but I'm much better at snapping out of it now. That's the difference, right? It's like the old me would have just wallowed in it. And it feels good to wallow in your misery, like short term. It feels great.
Yeah.
But it's, if you give into that, it's a slippery slope, because then you're just, you know, you're just feeding into that negative energy and negativity and negative momentum in your life versus like, okay, that sucked. What did I learn from it? How can I become bigger, better, faster, stronger, smarter? Okay. Got it. It doesn't mean you have to jump up and down and celebrate your whatever happened, because that's not realistic, but you get up quicker. You just you move forward. So yeah, I, you know, habits constantly. And another one I have here is shorten, simplify, stop adding. I used to be this note creator back in the day when I started reading self-help books. I still am. I tend to create lots of notes and lists and stuff. And like, okay, I'm going to categorize this here and this here and this here. And then what ends up happening is I've got so many lists and notes that I don't end up going back and doing certain things versus just taking the action and not writing it down and just doing it. Mm-hmm. That's another habit I'm working on.
I should add that one to my list. So another problem.
Yeah. Just do it. Just take the action. Just do it. Don't think about it. Don't keep writing. Like like posts first. I'm trying to like get better at posting with my social media. Mm-hmm. And I have this block and I keep like find like I'll write down tons of ideas and I have like reams of ideas of like, oh, this would be a good post. But it, like, I'm not doing them regularly enough. So I've got way more ideas. And if I would just start doing them, I would get better at them. And, you know, you're not going to get better at something if you don't just do it.
For sure. Do you, where do you still use mentors or an education in your, you know, personal life or business? Is that something that you kind of utilize a lot, or do you feel like you have got most of the answers figured out? You just need to take more action.
I mean, you know, I was talking to somebody, I mentor several people. I never had a mentor. Wish I had. I think that I would have elevated my life even quicker, but I don't regret anything that happened in my life. So maybe I shouldn't say I wish I had. I wonder how it would have been different if I'd had one. I think having a mentor is a great thing. Just having somebody that's been through stuff that you haven't and wants to genuinely help to give you advice to say, hey, I went through this. This is what happened. This is how I learned from it. You know, let me help you. And I talk to, you know, I can see how I'm helping some of these younger guys. And I've got three or four guys from my college, actually, because I won this award from my college this year. I went back and part of it was I met with several students and I hit it off with these students to kind of coach them then. And I've just kind of kept doing it. And it's just really neat to see them evolve in their lives. And I just sometimes I'll be coaching them and I'll catch myself and be like, damn, I wish I knew that at their age.
Right.
You know, so I'm all in on coaching and get having mentors. But I just personally just never had one.
Got it. What does your business model look like right now in terms of your coaching content you create?
There's no business model. So okay. I am earning $0. Mm-hmm. I don't have anything that I'm selling. But I've got things that I've been working on that I will sell in the future, but that's not why I'm doing them. But you know, if I can at least break even at some point, then
great. I mean, it's really cool. Obviously you don't need the money.
Right. Right. Well, like I said, you know, I don't, but at the same time, I don't want to just keep throwing money out into the universe and not getting anything back. I mean, that's part of the whole growth process, the whole career thing. It's like, yeah, okay. You got to have goals. Like, okay, I'm here. I want to get to here and I want to actually start, you know, at least breaking even. So, I have a curriculum that I'm working on. Like I said, I coach people, but at this point it's for free. It's just me learning what works and what doesn't. So I'm just gathering knowledge and data, and to put into my course and make sure that when I do start charging people, I'm giving them the absolute best possible experience that they can get. And yeah, I mean, I'm just, and my app is super excited. I've been working on that for 2.5 years and that should be ready in the next, I'm hoping 2 to 3 months, which is sort of a gamification version of tracking your habits. So it's
really cool.
Making it fun and exciting and getting you addicted, just like you do to these video games and social media. But in mine, when you level up on screen, you're also leveling up in real life. So you're like this rocket ship and you have your 5 cores, which are the cylinders of your engine, of your rocket ship. And in order to fly out and get off of Earth's gravitational pull, you have to start building your habits and start holding yourself accountable. And the more you do that, then you can get off and you get to the moon and then to the next planet and the next solar system and galaxy, and you're meeting aliens along the way and there's asteroid fields. And so it's like, it's a game, but it's a game in that you can't win unless you're actually doing these things. I mean, you can lie to the app and say, yo, I did this, but that's no fun. So you actually have to improve your life, and it makes it fun and addictive. That's the idea anyways. We'll see how it goes. But that's my number one priority, is to make it addictive, just like social media, and using these same science and technology that these companies like Facebook and Google use to get us hooked.
Right.
But in a good way.
For something good. That's really interesting. Cause I have a curriculum that I take my clients through for their dating lives and social lives. And I've tried to gamify it quite a bit. They start at like a white belt, then they go through the, you know, like the karate belts, try to get up to black. And there's different milestones along the way to graduate from belt to belt and different habits that you have to build. But the, you know, I would love something that was in an app, something that could track it, because the difficult thing for me is keeping track of where everyone's at, getting them to like, I track all their habits and like a habit tracker, and we can all see each other's habits, which is cool. Right. But people get kind of lost in the shuffle, or they're like, oh, no one's really watching if I'm doing this. So right. sometimes
accountability, around, like, you got to have the accountability. Right.
Exactly. Absolutely.
Yep. And my first beta is not going to have it, but my second version is going to have a social component to it. Mm-hmm. Well, the first version will have a scoreboard. So you can see like where you stand against all the other app users in terms of your momentum points, which is kind of fun. But the second version is going to take it to the next level, and you'll actually be able to interact more with other people and kind of hold each other accountable. Like, hey, we're working on the same habits over here. Let's help each other type of thing. Cause that, you know, the accountability part, it's everything. And yeah, we can all raise our hand and say, yes, I should do this, I should do that, and put it on a piece of paper. But actually following through with it, it's not going to become a habit, as you know, until you've taken that action enough times to where your brain goes, okay, got it, autopilot, don't need to worry about it anymore. Because habits don't care if they're good or bad, helping or hurting us. They're going to do their thing no matter what, right? And so if it's hurting us and building that negative momentum, you got to go, and there's that front-loaded work to get rid of it. You know, it's not going to be easy, and you got to work, and you got to, you know, make a commitment to yourself and hold yourself accountable until you've been able to get that monkey off your back. And then you got that those tailwinds behind you, and they're on autopilot. And then you don't have to think about those, just like you weren't thinking about the bad habit that was hurting you. Right. And so that's kind of my whole system, is like getting as many of those going for you and getting rid of as many of the ones that are working against you in each of these five core areas.
Yeah. That's obviously vital. And, that'd be cool. Let me know when it's out. Maybe I can get all my guys on it, or find a way to like white label it or something. Yeah,
it sounds like it would be helpful for you. If you go on my website, More Momentum, MOORE momentum.com, like my last name, there's an app at the top. It says Gamify Your Life. There's a little app. You can sign up for the beta for when it comes out.
Oh, the beta's out. Okay, cool.
Yeah, when it comes out, it'll notify you. So it's
got it.
Months, but it'll notify you when it's out, and then it'll send it to you.
Cool. And you have a cool free giveaway on there as well. Something else, right?
There's a quiz you can take, which is where you to see where you currently stand in each of your five core areas, just a real quick quiz. And then after you take that, it feeds you into, there's an ebook that I have that kind of the stuff I'm talking about. It's sort of the first stages of starting to stop your failure habits and replace them with success habits. It's just some tips to get you going. And then when the app comes out, that'll be the next logical step for people to be able to use that as well as the course.
Cool. Anything else in terms of where guys can get more stuff from you or connect?
My website, like I said, moremomentum.com. And then, you know, our Instagram page, we have over 400,000 followers. It's Five Core Life with the actual five. And so that's, you know, that does well in terms of people just, we play viral videos and stuff of people just living their best life, living the five core life, having fun, motivational stuff. And then I do a lot of interviews just like you're doing with me now. I do with other people, and I put little clips on there, and I do my little, just my little takes on life and say, hey, let's do this together. Let's habit hack. You know, life is a game. Let's make it a game. Let's make it fun. And let's figure out how to gamify the process of stopping those bad habits and replacing them with the good ones. So that's what it's about.
Yeah, man. Well, thanks so much, Will, for coming on and sharing your wisdom and your really interesting story. I'm sure every guy listening to this is like, dude, that guy's got a pretty sick life. I'd like to emulate that. So check out his stuff, guys. Good stuff.
Well, that's nice of you. Thanks, buddy. Thanks, Robbie, for having me on. This has been great. I appreciate it, bro.
Yeah, man.
Thanks for listening. If you want more, go to innerconfidence.com, and don't forget to subscribe to this podcast for the latest episodes.